as Wartell makes a run ahead of it. Bergkamp suddenly changed pace through the centre. It's Bergkamp! That's magnificent! The move, and then this, which left Dabby's ass totally stranded.
Hello, dear listeners and viewers and people doing neither. I don't know what you're doing. And welcome to Bergkamp Wonderland. We are back. The kidney stone is gone. I'm like a new man. It doesn't hurt. I've got no more pink wee-wee. And if you see me drinking this is... electrolytes, I think it is. I always get that wrong. It is electrolytes. And yeah, you need those. You need those in your life. They're good for you. With me tonight, it's first of all, it's Sophie. I haven't had you on since was it the predictions last time we had you on?
I think so.
Yeah, that was August. And yeah, I had
too
to
long.
Yeah, family members of my family just kept disappearing, and my brother disappeared halfway through, and I went, I can't really carry on doing it now. So all those other people I had planned doing it for the next 3 days, sorry about that. But these things happen. I mean, he's a Liverpool fan, so it's his own fault. So how you been? No hat. I didn't even know you had hair.
I know, when you actually reacted the way you did when I appeared with no hat, I was like, wow, I wear a hat all the time. I mean, it's like, you know, it's just my thing. But the truth is, we're always honest on this show. I'm having some hot flushes today, and I just couldn't deal with the bloody hat. So this is why I'm hatless.
Oh, that is a shame. If you'd have told me guess what hair you had, I'd have just red mohawk.
Really? Well, it's grown. It's grown a lot. Usually I have it like, you know, I have my little flow hawk going, but just kind of wearing hat all the time. So I just keep it long. These days.
You back from your holidays? Nice.
That back from Cyprus. Yeah, I'm a bit lag jetted. But other than that, all good. I did notice I wasn't that jet lagged. I noticed you need to change some of those shirts on your intro.
That's last season's. It's ridiculous. I can't be bothered. At the end of the last the post game show that I did last night, I haven't even played that as the outro. That's how unorganized I am. But I promise for the next season, I will have it with all the new players and all the rubbish ones gone. So yeah, I will get that done. Now we've got two mysterious guests that haven't been on in quite some time. It's Carl. Carl, you cheeky buggy, where you been? I don't know where you've been.
The thing is, due to national security, I can't really tell you where I've been, but just know that me and James, I'm not going to say surname, but you know, we have saved the world, so it's fine.
I got told by someone that you went on a tour of all the dead underground stations, all the ones that no longer exist, because there are quite a few, surprisingly. How many are there, do you know?
I can neither confirm or deny that, Danny. Again, that's national security, so... You know,
each one's got its own Stargate.
Again, I can't confirm or deny that, but when I went to a different planet, I brought back some very nice goodies, Danny, I'll share with you.
Oh, lovely. And talking about goodies, another one who hasn't been on in a while, is that a retro 89 shirt you got on there? Or is it the real?
It is indeed. No, it's a retro one. It's a one that was bought this year.
Still looks good.
Not a real one. I was only what, 7, and not a large human when 89 was around.
7.
Oh, yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
terrible. Oh, we've got an early question there from Jimmy. Save that for later. So, Rich, it's good to have you back. Carl, it's good to have you back. And Sophie, it's good to have you on again. All right, let's get on with the show, shall we? I have got because I've got all you lovely people in, it's not just the usual rabble of uninformed scumbags. I thought I'd actually make a list of talking points. Start with you, Soph. How do you, I mean, all of you, I want you all to, don't make me go one to the effect, go Sophie, Richard, and then Carl. So how do you feel about Arsenal at the moment? 14 games, 12 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss, scored 45, conceded 6 with 9 clean sheets. Any other season, that's title winning form, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we're against the juggernaut. you know, an allegedly cheating juggernaut. I don't like to kind of, you know, bring that up, but I just did, especially because of the news today that really this isn't going to get resolved until 2025. So as long as we keep finishing second, we can retro celebrate winning the league. It's just a joke. I mean, the thing is no matter what you do, you still have to win on the pitch, and they've got one of the best managers in the history of football. And, you know, he's brilliant and he's revolutionized the game. And going up against him, you've got to give Mikel Arteta props. And Jurgen Klopp, who's been lauded also as one of the best managers ever in the Premier League, to be challenging those two teams at this point, considering when Arteta came, we were literally a dead, broken club that Arteta and Edu had to revive and give the kiss of life to. It's incredible. And Kev always used to say to me, Super Kev, when I was, you know, when we finished eighth and started the season 0-0-0, I was like, come on, you can't, losing to Emery in the Europa League semi-final. I was very much, is this the right guy? Not sure. Maybe we should get rid. But since the end of that Europa League failure and going into the following season where we missed out on the Champions League, you could see once he did get his own players and he was building a team in his image, it was turning. And any Arsenal fan who looks at what's happening now and is an Arteta denier is mental. I mean, put the straitjacket on them, send them into the asylum, because I just don't get that. It's, you know, the progress has led to process has led to progress. And the next step is success. And we'll kick ourselves because a lot of people say, oh, it's the Aston Villa game. But Aston Villa are a really good team. It's the Fulham games and the West Ham game that I just can't get over and stuck in my throat. We'll rue those losses big time. So mathematically, it's still possible. It's going to be difficult. But in terms of where the club is, I'm loving the journey and I'm not thinking too much about the destination. And it's been a long time since I've felt that way about my club.
It's making me giddy. Rich, how do you feel about it all? Because you've not been, I think the last time you were on, we were still in the Champions League and the league form was going pretty well.
Yeah, I kind of very much echo and I'm on the similar train of thought with Sophie. And, you know, I kind of want to embody that that video of good old Stuart McFarlane. You know, I fucking love my club. You know, it's... I'm really enjoying the journey that we're on. Like I said, it's horrible going up against Chelsea. It's something that obviously Liverpool have been battling with for, you know, the last 5 years or so, that it's just, you know, you have to be almost like invincible form to kind of touch this absolute monster squad, this juggernaut that's been created, you know, with 115 charges. You know, like I that Fulham game, that was a real big disappointment because I think we played badly. But like even the West Ham game, I think we had like the most shots on goal that we've ever thing. And it's like that's three games we've lost all season. And ordinarily in a league campaign, you lose three games, that's you're still in there and thereabouts. But you know, even that's might not even be good enough to kind of top all these guys. So I'm at the stage where I'm kind of at peace with it, in the sense of like, we can only control what we can control, and I can only enjoy what Arteta and the boys are doing out on the pitch. I'm loving the football we're playing. I'm enjoying the connection. I've been to a couple of games, but it's, it's evident coming through the TV. I'm enjoying that connection that has been created by Mikel and Edu and that between the fans and the club and the players. I'm happy. I love my club. I'm just happy. So we can't do anything. Those cyborgs up in the Middle Eastlands, we can't do anything about them. So it is what it is. But I'm loving the journey that I'm on. Long may it continue.
You the same, Carl?
I mean, yeah, there's not really much to add apart to what the other two said. I think when Mikel Arteta came in, you think about the 2020 season, we were in dire straits. I mean, we had, the dressing room was a mess. We had a manager who, again, he's a good manager now, but when Emery was there, he just wasn't the right fit for Arsenal. And I think it was evident. And I think from where we come from to where we are now is a huge leap, absolutely huge leap. I mean, Arsenal was always a big club and we should never be in eighth place at all. I remember the start of the season after when we didn't win a game and we had like 5 points after about seven games or something like that. And, you know, who knew that, you know, a few years later, we'd be where we are, challenging Manchester City for the title. And, you know, if you look back and you think where we've come from, you have to be proud of Arsenal, no matter what we do. I mean, yes, all of us here and all of us listening wants to win the league. And, you know, no one's going to be satisfied with second place. No one wants to be the first one to lose, like, at all. And that's how you got to look at it. Yes, we are against Man City, but, you know, everyone's starts on 0 points at the start of the season. It just depends on how you play on the pitch. You know, we can all go back to decisions that go against us, you know, things that, you know, didn't go our way. But I truly believe that it happens to every single club and it does balance out sometimes. I mean, at least you hope, you think it does. But, yeah, I'm happy with Arsenal at the moment. I'm happy where we are. Do I want us to do a little bit more? Of course I do. Like any club, anybody wants more for their club, no matter what. So I do want more. And like Sophie alluded to, you know, the Fulham game, bad. That we should have won. The West Ham game, bad. And even to extent the Aston Villa game, we should have won that. And that's the, if we don't end up winning the title at the end of this season, we're going to look back at those three games and we're going to think, why didn't we do more? Why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do that? And
especially in the season where we've taken 4 points off a City.
100%.
How crazy is that though? That's three games. That's just three games. Like I said, we've been brilliant against Scotland and it's just three games. And yet it still isn't enough to beat these gids. It's so frustrating. Sorry, Carl, I didn't mean to derail you, mate.
No. Even to extent the Spurs game at home, like, you know, that's when Spurs won the title back in then and look where they are now. And, you know, we should have won that game at home. You think, you know, if you want to win any game, you want to beat Spurs at home. And the fact that we drew with them, again, sticks into my throat. And we'll talk about Spurs later. But like, that's sticking in my throat because we definitely should have won that game. But, you know, hopefully, you know, we can do it this season. And if we can't, then we go again next season. But we know that we've come a hell of a long way. And like the other two alluded to, we got to be happy where we are right now.
Yes. You mentioning about the, I was going to talk about the trust the process, but a little thing here up on the screen, it says how many games the every team that's won the Premier League. You look back at the first season, Man United won it and lost six. Then they won it and lost four. Blackburn won the league and lost seven games. Then Man United lost six, Man United five. Arsenal won it in 98 and lost six. And it went on and on and on. And then you get back to a couple of seasons ago, Soph. Liverpool lost one game and didn't win the league. That is almost unbelievable, isn't it? In any league in the world, yeah, to do that. I know PSV are about to win the league. And they've only lost one game, and Inter Milan are brilliant and all these others. But in the best, most competitive league in the world, that you can still only lose a couple of games and not be champions. That's madness, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Mikel talked about the fine margins in the Champions League, which is so true, like taking your chances. But it's become that way in the Premier League as well. And we went off the boil trying to convert our chances into goals. And that became a bit of an Achilles heel. I always felt like when we played Havertz in midfield and didn't play him as the number nine, we struggled. Jesus struggles. He needs six or seven chances to maybe score one. We lost Martinelli this season to injury. He really hasn't been the same, you know. So there've been some offensive forces that just haven't been as effective this season. But when you look at how we didn't lose to Liverpool. We didn't lose to City. We beat and drew Chelsea. You know, we've got Man United to come and Tottenham to come. But when you look at the results against the so-called top six, it's superior this this season than any other season. And it's kind of insane to think that the results in particular against the two teams that are up the top with us, Arsenal's failure will always be mental. And that's the toughest obstacle for Mikel and the team to overcome. They've shown that they can overcome adversity. You know, missing out on the Champions League to Tottenham, we come and we bounce back and we go on an improbable run that no one was expecting. But when the spotlight was on us last April, we failed. We weren't ready for the moment. Same with the Champions League. We've been out of it a long time. We get to the quarterfinals. It's all very romantic, but we're just not ready for that big moment. And people mistook a poor Bayern Munich Bundesliga team for pedigree and heritage in the Champions League. But we bounce back again, and here we are this season mounting another challenge. And it's the results, similarly last season, the Southampton game, those teams that we drop points to where we have to fix things and be more ruthless. Because I think one of the things that's really going to haunt me is that we were able to get the results against City and Liverpool, but once again, in moments, we failed against the simpler sides. And that is the next frontier, I think, for Mikel and the team to overcome. But, you know, I think that Liverpool, I saw someone write Liverpool got some West Ham results too, and that's true. I think the Jurgen Klopp retirement announcement didn't help them very much. Thought it was very selfish of him, actually. Much like Megan Rapinoe when she announced her retirement from the US women's national team just before the World Cup. Very selfish, very me, me, me. Announce it at the end of the season. And I think that for us, it's been monumental. So, yeah, the losses are tough. But again, it's going to be another season we learn from. It took Michael Jordan like 8 years to win a championship in the NBA. It took Jurgen Klopp a while to fix things at Liverpool. You know, Manchester City were just in the doldrums before all of the billions of investment in their club. Chelsea, the same. Manchester United, look what's happened to them after Sir Alex Ferguson has left. It's not easy. Football isn't easy, and the margins get tighter and tighter as the seasons go.
I've got this little thing here from my own spreadsheet for people at home and on the bus and walking the dog. You can see this is only Arteta's games while he's been at Arsenal. That's why some of the grey ones are from his first season. And you can see this is how the teams finished last season. Man City first, us second, Man United second, third, Newcastle fourth, Liverpool fifth. I think that's how it finished, unless I've been pressing buttons. But either way, you can see in previous seasons, I mean, look at our previous records against Man City. Five games, lost them all. Against Man United, the away games, lost both of them, and then the home ones, we're doing them. And even things like Newcastle and Villa, we've not had much luck against. But the tide is turning. And so, Rich, with the trust the process thing, every time we say trust the process, and some do and some don't, and when we do, the process shows that it works. And then it tails off a little bit. And then we all rally up and go, trust the process. And again, some people don't and some people do. And now we're on the up of the trust the process. So do you see any more ups with the trust the process of it getting better and better for us to be able to beat everybody and be the best team in the league? Because at the moment, we are probably the second best team in the league, not just because we're in second place in the table, but the goal scored, the results against each other. The only team that we've had no luck against is Villa. So is there any more, can you squeeze any more juice out of that trust the process?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I mean, and the thing is, all I want to do, I want to speak for everybody, is have the team improve and get better and learn from what they're doing. You know, look at last season, or even the season before that, where we finished, and then the next season brought in some players with a bit of pedigree, and Zinchenko and Jesus. Started playing a slightly different way. We improved. Our results got better. And we tailed off. We had, you know, injuries to Saliba and Tomiyasu and stuff like that. We brought in the wrong defender to come and replace them. And we ran out of steam and lost the league. And then this year, pretty much all of our metrics have all improved. You know, the way we're controlling games have improved. The way we're like I said, the amount of clean sheets we're getting, the amount of shots we're facing has decreased, and that, so all those metrics are going in an upward trend. you know, it's, like I said, it's, it is just a shame that we're up against who we're up against, but that's all you can really ask for. And unfortunately, you know, like it seems like, you know, it was only what, after the Villa game, that, you know, Arteta out was trending and that, because, you know, social media and Twitter and all that. So he's just a cesspool, and it's, you know, you can't have any nuance or any balanced debate in that. Everything's binary. Everything's either you're in or you're out. You hate him or you love him. And there's very little, let's say, understanding and stuff like that. But as long as we're going in the right direction, I mean, I don't want to say that the big I am and like I told you so kind of thing, but even on my earlier things with on the pod with you, Danny, you could see if you took away any kind of agenda or anything like that, and you saw what Arteta was trying to do and what the green sheet shoots that he was, you could see what he was doing. He's set out. He's doing exactly what he set out to do. Do you remember his first press conference where he set out them non-negotiables and what he wanted and what we needed to do? And, you know, you'd have to be an absolute agenda-driven grifter to say that he isn't doing what he's set out to be doing and what he said he's going to do. And like I said, all our metrics are pointing upwards. Everything is going in the right direction, and who's to say it can't get any better? I mean, let's say I've been three losses in a season, really, so far is as you alluded to on that that spreadsheet, is championship form in pretty much any other season, bar since, you know, Pep has been in the league. Obviously it can improve. You know, there's things that Mikel still gets wrong, you know, substitutions, trusting certain players and the ability to use his wider squad and stuff like that. He's a young manager, you know, it's, you know, yes, he's been here. What is it, 4 years now he's been at the club? I mean, still in managerial terms.
Technically his fifth, into his fifth season. But I mean, can I just add to what you just said real quick before you bounce to Carl? I think the process phase is gone. I think we're in the progress phase right now. I think the next phase is success. So I think the process is over with. That chapter is closed as far as I'm concerned. Excuse me. And I think we're in the progress phase. And I think success will come next season.
How about you, Carl? How do you see it all going? Do you think, like Sov saying, trust the progress? Do you think that excludes the FA Cup and League Cup? Because he doesn't seem to be bothered about those two. If this is a game of darts, he's not going for the 25s. He's going for the bull, isn't he?
Someone, I can't remember who said, I think it was Rich, I said it. He's a young manager, and he will learn that you can't put all your eggs in one basket. And I think, you know, sometimes when Wenger used to throw away the League Cup and just play the kids, the problem with Mikel is he doesn't, whereas if you just put a squad full of kids, everyone, and we went out, everyone would be like, oh yeah, you know what? Problem is he plays the fringe players, and when they don't perform because they haven't played for a while, He's almost like he throws his toys out his pram, and then he says, okay, no, we shouldn't do that. I mean, this season, we come up against a Liverpool team, and we went for it. And unfortunately, on the day, they were better than us. I want to say we went out to Brighton for the League Cup, did we? I'm sure it was Brighton. It was. And we didn't perform well that game. Problem is, he's going to need to know a mix and match. And the problem is where he doesn't trust all his squad, and then he doesn't want to play his star players because he plays them too much. I mean, like Soph alluded to, Richard alluded to, he needs to trust his squad, and he doesn't at the moment. You know, Saka needs to have one leg and one eye, and for him not to play. And Mikel, I've got a feeling it's going to come a cropper to Mikel very, very soon. Because you look at all the challenges that Saka has, and you know, the amount of times he's fouled, and no matter what, he just doesn't sort of give him a rest or take him off. And that's going to, I hope it doesn't, and I hope I'm chatting shit right now, but I've got a bad feeling that Saka's going to get injured really badly, and then Mikel's going to have no one. He's going to have to rely on his squad, or if we bring in someone to replace Saka at the end of the season. And like Rich said, he's a young manager, and he's going to learn. He is going to learn. And unfortunately, he may have to learn the hard way. But, you know, I think people forget that Mikel Arteta won a trophy in his first season. And it wasn't a little trophy. It was the FA Cup. And when you come into a squad and people like to use an agenda to say, oh, we spent X amount of money, it hasn't won nothing. And people forget that because he won the FA Cup so early on in his career, it's almost like they just forgotten it. And, you know, like Sophie said, we are in a progress phase. And as much as I support Arsenal and I support Mikel Arteta, there is going to become a time where we are going to have to start judging him on things that he's won, because we may just plateau. You know, we've gone up from where we was. We've gone up and we've absolutely done brilliantly. But are we in a danger of just plateauing, of just being second, being second, being third, being second? Like, I'm just happy. I mean, like you said, we're against Man City and they're a juggernaut of a squad. But if Mikel is as good manager as we all hope he is, he's got to find a way to be better than Man City, to be better and try and get that first place. And, you know, if we do want better, let me make this clear, I do not want Arteta out. I want him to stay. I want him to be brilliant. I want him to stay forever. Well, while he's winning. But, you know, he needs to find a way of trying to be better than Man City, because we can't just be happy with second place. You know, like back in the day with Arsene Wenger, we was happy to get a fourth place. Fourth place is a trophy. Now, second place is not a trophy. And as much as, you know, we progress from fourth to second, we can't keep on being happy being second. We have to, you know, maybe go for a cup, go for another FA Cup, go for a League Cup, go for the Champions League, go for the league, but be better than Man City.
He hasn't proved to be a closer yet. That's the key for him now. You know, always be closing, as Alec Baldwin said in Glengarry Glen Ross. And he hasn't proven that just yet. And eventually the training wheels do have to come off, and the guys make really good points on that. So you ask yourself, you know, eventually with the investment, because everyone wants ROI on their investment, and the Kroenkes have given him the keys to the kingdom. Emery never got that support. He never had the executive team in place to have that support. He made a list of players he wanted to buy and he was given the opposite. He had a toxic dressing room, you know, couldn't remove Ozil even though he wanted to desperately. And when Arteta has been given all the power, it takes a lot for an owner to sign off on you, you know, drop kicking your captain to the curb. It takes a lot for people can say what they want about the Kroenkes, but they've written off some really bad contracts and we have gotten nothing in return for them. So they really believe in this guy. And I think despite the fact of, you know, whether we win or not, Arteta is here for the long haul. Now they've been patient. They were patient with their coaches in the US, the Rams coach. He delivered in the end. He got to a Super Bowl, he got to a championship game, but eventually he delivered the big one. He closed. Same thing with the Denver Nuggets and the NBA. Even their lacrosse team won. You know, eventually they're going to want ROI, but they're going to be patient before that happens.
Yeah, that's it's important. You've got to wait. It isn't like some sports where you can turn, well, unless you're going to chuck all the money at it and break all the rules, you ain't going to do it overnight.
I mean, so just quickly, Danny. So yeah, why do you think that he doesn't close? I mean, last season we had, we could say that we lost Saliba, and obviously that's the reason why, you know, we was playing our second, third string defence. This season, he's got everything. He's, you know, the players are returning back from injury at the right time. He's got his defense here. He's got his first choice strikers. He's got everything. At the moment, Mikel Arteta has every single tool that he's asked for. So why do you think at the moment then he's still not closing, or we still are so far behind, but we can't get that next step?
It's a great question. And last season, I don't think when we were 8 points ahead, I don't think it's because we lost Saliba. I think it's because we didn't know how to handle losing Saliba. I don't think we've coped mentally or have a proper plan or a bench that can make up for the same quality of having lost Saliba, Tomiyasu, Thomas Partey, and it happened in the season prior. And he's a little bit stubborn and needs to learn from that. This season, we've been really lucky, right? And maybe, like, if you look at it last season, we're 8 points clear. If we have Declan Rice and Havertz and Trossard, well, we had Trossard for half the season, in the team, do we win that title? And this season, I think that bouncing back from Villa and Bayern Munich was massive, because I think a lot of fans were expecting us to completely drop off and finish with a whimper, the same thing, the same way we did last season. But having experienced players who've been there before, like Jorginho, like Havertz, Declan Rice, maybe he hasn't won the Premier League, but taking a team and being captain of a team, going through Europe and winning a trophy, I don't care what trophy it is, they still won it. That makes a massive difference. And Gabriel had some mistakes in him last season. This season, I think he's been a better player than Saliba. He's performed better. Benjamin White has excelled. You've got the goalkeeper who's been able to improve that back line as well. So, Carl, I don't think there's any excuses this year. However, I don't buy into the fact that we would have bottled it if we don't win it this year, because I think we've been more competitive. I think we've been more elevated in how we perform. I think we've been better at handling adversity. I think last year we did bottle it. I hate to use that phrase. We failed. I don't like to use the word bottle, but this season, I think if we don't win it, I don't think it's a failure. I just think that with the games that we've lost and the team that we're up against who've been there before and have that experience, they've just got the edge. And now we need to find what our edge is. And I think that will come. And unfortunately, you know, I'm not sure if we've done enough to make that happen this season. But it's a great question.
Just want to move on and touch on something very quickly. Liverpool announced their new manager. Liverpool agree a deal with Feyenoord to make Arne Slot's Reds new manager, as Dutch side accept compensation package for Boss to replace Jurgen Klopp. He's 45, not much of a player in his time. Won the Eredivisie last season with Feyenoord. This season they're second behind PSV because they've only lost one game and they're actually ruining it. And I think he won a Dutch Cup this season. Rich, any thoughts on that?
Absolutely none, mate. I know very little about this guy. What I would say is, has it ever really gone well after a massive manager has left the club? You think of Moyes after Ferguson, you know, Emery after after Wenger, or you know, I'm sure that's what it's. Yeah, exactly. It's never going to be. It's never going to be good to follow a legendary manager.
Who's doing the dishes?
Sounds excited.
It's the dog. I'm about to go brainer. Hang on.
So,
Dutch managers up north. Dutch managers in general in the Premier League, have they done well? I think it's a big risk.
Bruce Willett. That's about it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but he had the money behind him at Chelsea, didn't he? You know? I mean, Ten Hag, Frank de Boer, didn't do well at Palace. He was a grand failure.
God, he was out after 8 games, wasn't he?
Yeah. But I think they're trying to replace like for like, right? In the sense of maybe personality, character, not credentials. When Klopp came to Liverpool, he already had amassed some impressive credentials at Dortmund. But I don't know. I think they'll struggle next season because they've got a turnaround in their squad as well.
Salah is done.
You know, Salah's done. I don't see Van Dijk staying. I bet Van Dijk leaves in the summer.
One more payday.
And yeah, it's going to be very interesting. This is going to be really interesting for Arsenal. Capitalize on the moments, because Chelsea aren't going to be shit forever. Manchester United aren't going to be shit forever. You know, Manchester City are going to continue to evolve and get stronger. And Liverpool, I think, are going to go through another turnaround phase. And we need to capitalize on these moments, which is why it's so frustrating that we didn't win the title last season, which is why it's frustrating that we've put ourselves in a bit of a hole again this season, having to rely on other people to get results for us. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But I think Liverpool, I'm not saying they'll struggle. I just don't think they'll be challenging for the title next season.
Carl, do you think it's going to be an absolute failure and it'll be out like by Christmas like I do?
I hope so. No, I'm being honest with you. I genuinely do hope so. I mean, I've got no love for Liverpool in the slightest. I hope he comes in, he's a grand failure. And I hope they get relegated next season. But, you know, the Dutch league to the English league is very, very different. It really is. And Ten Hag can allude to that, you know, the difference in play, the difference, you know, I honestly think that a lower league Premier League team would easily, and I mean, and I genuinely easily finish in the top six in the Eredivisie, and without no doubt of a problem. So, you know, he's going to realise that maybe the time and the ball that you have in the Eredivisie, you don't have that. He, you know, the robust challenges, you know, the things that he's still going to have a problem trying to get his message across and his style of play, because it's not all going to happen in one season. So Liverpool are going to have to take probably a season of hurt and, mm-hmm. you know, until they get used to his style of play, and then he might come good. But, you know, he might hit the ground running. We don't know. I very much doubt it. But, you know, Liverpool are definitely going to have a season of hurt before he can get his whole tactical plan across to Liverpool. And like the other two alluded to, I think Salah's done. I think Van Dijk will leave. You know, the players that they've brought in are hit and miss. One minute they're good, one minute they're bad. And it's just a time until, you know, players don't believe in the new manager's message. Do they go? You know, does the goalkeeper go? You know, I mean, there's so many players that at the moment could just say, you know what, I can go and get my payday. I do think the Saudi issue is probably gone now. I think people are deciding, obviously knowing that the Saudi thing is not all what it is. But, you know, like you said, Van Dijk's still got another payday in him. Salah, he could easily go to any club in Europe.
I think Luis Diaz might think about, he's got these dreams of playing in Spain too. You know, it's and also what's indicative is Xavi Alonso did not take that job. Why did he not take that job? Because he knows going in after Klopp, that's tough. And also the players that might not be there. That tells you everything, I think, that a player like him who loved the club would rather stay at Leverkusen and keep building there than go to Liverpool.
Anybody who watches German football will know that when Klopp left Dortmund, it was like a scene from the Somme. Every single player, he'd squeeze every ounce of everything out and they were broken. Mm-hmm. And we saw the end of last season with Mane, Firmino and Henderson all leaving the core part of his squad. And this season, the players haven't quite been up to it, and Salah is done. And like I was saying with the centre-back, there's so many players there. It's like he's gone one season too many, because looking at it, they should have had more than one title. And Liverpool fans, I would imagine, would be angry that they didn't get more titles. But he had the players, and now he's going. And whoever takes over, they are in for a world of pain, because so many of them players aren't ready. And a few of them are past it, and a few won't want to be there. So I'm just looking forward to it. And I'm glad that Alonso is staying there at Dortmund. I mean, at Bayer Leverkusen. It's lovely to see.
It's refreshing.
It is, yeah. Not someone staying to build something rather than buggering off at the first chance of something glittery. Rich, start with you on this one. Can you see anyone taking points off of City? Their last five games, 1, 2, 3, 4, is Forest away, Wolves at home, Fulham away, Spurs away, and finally West Ham at home. Can you see them dropping points?
I can't see them at all. I think Fulham have got a decent record at home, and like, you know, we struggled there. I think they beat Spurs. They took Liverpool all the way. I think Liverpool just got over the line and beat them. I think it scoreline flattened them a little bit, but that's the only other standout that I can really watch for, because I think Tottenham are going to roll over and let them gnaw at their belly. when they go just to stop us winning the league. They're not going to want to take any points off them at all. So now, unfortunately, I can't see them dropping any points. Let's say again, was it Forest? No. West Ham, who will have, I don't think will have much to play for. Are they even are they close to the
Forest, Wolves, Fulham, Spurs, West Ham?
Yeah, no, I can't see any of those teams. I said when your biggest hope you're hoping at is for Fulham, it's not looking great. But like I say, as long as we win our games and we take care of what we can do, we can't do anything about what they're doing, I guess. But it's not looking good. And that's why I think I'm kind of like, it's not really stressing me out. It's not really like getting to me or anything like that. I'm not like super anxious, just because I've got no indication that, I don't see any indication that the T1000 are just going to absolutely annihilate and strangle every team that they come up against. I'm in the minority. I actually despise watching Man City. I find not even so much their brand of football, it's just that every team they come up against, their teams are so scared to go up against them, and rightfully so, because look what they did to Brighton the other night. I think they're just going to do that to every team now. You know, their bench is more expensively assembled and is better than pretty much every other team's first 11. It is what it is, unfortunately. I don't know about you guys, if you guys think they're going to drop any points, but I really can't see it.
Carl?
Maybe that lot of the road, maybe. Maybe for pride. But no, unfortunately, I just can't see them at all dropping any points, and it's sad. I just think it's sad because you look at it and you just think to yourself, there's no games that you think, oh, maybe. No, it's just a case of they are going to juggernaut, they are going to steamroll, they are going to literally win every single game. And even with their striker out, and he hasn't played for God how many games now, and they're still winning. He probably hasn't been fit for a while.
It's fine. They've got World Cup winner Julian Alvarez up front as well. Like, that's the thing about Man City, and that's the thing that maybe we need to build. Sorry, to the thing is, you've got that. You take out that one component, you've got another world class elite player to just slot into that thing. Oh, Jeremy Doku's injured. Oh, it's fine. We've got 100 million. Jack Grealish can slot into the thing. Oh, Ruben Dias is injured. Oh, it's fine. You know, 50 million. John Stones is. Say that it's so hard to compete, and no other squad, very few other squads can compete against that. Sorry, Carl, I've done you again. I've derailed you again.
It's fine. Yeah, it's coming tedious at the moment, because you know it's almost like they gave teams a little bit of a head start as well, because they weren't brilliant at the start of the season, but you just know that they've got this uncanny ability every single year to just win like 15, 16 games in a bounce. And you know, everyone knows it as well. Everyone says it. You know, I think in January, when they weren't top of the table, and I think all the famous pundits were saying, you know, Man City will go on a run, and it's predicted, and it's been done, and it's, you know, you want a little bit of excitement in this league, and unfortunately, when you see Man City just win and win and win and win, and they're about to win. If they win, I hope they don't, but they're about to win, what, five out of seven titles, you kind of just like shrug your shoulders and be like, oh, okay, cool, now we are where we are. Not to go all gold bridge on us, but like it does become a little bit tedious and a little bit boring. You want some excitement, and hopefully, you know, Arsenal can provide that excitement, because you are hoping that Man City do slip up. I wish they were in the Champions League still, because they'd have one eye on that prize. And unfortunately, they're not. So they're going to go all out for it. Pep's going to, you know, go all out for this league, because he obviously wants it. And I've got no doubt that Man City will wipe the floor with Man United in the FA Cup final. It's a little bit frustrating. You know, you want to slip up somewhere. But saying all that, even if Man City do slip up, we still got to do our job. We still got to go to Spurs on Sunday, and when we still got to beat Bournemouth, we still got to beat Man United. You know, all these teams that are going to try and stop us winning, we've got to do our job and try and beat those as well.
Soph, you got any wise words on this?
I think it's challenging when you're playing teams that aren't playing for anything. But there are two teams that City have to face, and they're playing for everything. You know, Tottenham without the Champions League money, that's going to be another a rough season for them. They desperately want to get into the Champions League. They have to win that game. They've been City's bogey team, maybe not under this manager, but they have shown of any team in the league that they can beat City. And I don't care what anyone says, mentally, sometimes that's a block. And Spurs have certain players, like James Maddison will totally get up for that game, but he'll go AWOL against Brighton, right? They're that type of character team. Nottingham Forest are an angry team. They are furious right now about what happened to them last weekend, how they've been treated and dragged through the mud via the media. They are pissed off. And they gave them a bit of a tough time, didn't they? Was it last season or earlier this season? So you have to say, like, these are professional footballers. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they've got something to play for. The West Ham game is a write-off. They're awful. They're not getting West Ham are going to get battered in that game, I think. And Fulham are a tricky team because they have a manager that has integrity. De Zerbi, I don't know what the fuss is about him, to be honest with you, being linked with all these top jobs and stuff like that. He's so sullen. It's almost like he did his mate a favour the other night. Brighton never showed up. They weren't up for it. They weren't prepared for that match at all. But I do believe Fulham and their manager will want to put in a good showing. And I agree with Carl. We still have to win our games. North London Derby is not going to be easy at all. You know, Ange doesn't have a plan B and they play a high line, but it's still a North London derby. Form goes out the window. Old cliche. Old Trafford. I was at that game, was it at the beginning of this season or last, where we lost 3-1. And I was standing there in the away end. That was where we got really screwed by VAR. I think it was the challenge on Odegaard. I was like, how on earth are we losing this game 3-1? I just don't know how we lost it. Old Trafford does really bizarre things to us. However, we've also won the league there twice. So the romantic part of me, guys, is saying we've got to go to two places where we've won the league twice. Many, many years ago at White Hart Lane. And of course, we know what we did there with our legendary side. Old Trafford, you remember what happened there twice. So there's some romance here for Arsenal too. 20 years since the Invincibles won. Football works in mysterious ways. And until the fat referee blows the whistle at the end of the season and it's over, there's hope. And yes, the hope kills you. However, football does have really weird ways of creating and making stories. And I believe it's our time. I really do. I can't accept that it's over. I can't, because mathematically it's still possible. And I don't think we're gonna lose another game. We may draw, but I don't think we're gonna lose another game. But I believe it's our time.
I agree with all of that. Look, it's I can't see them losing, but hopefully, yeah, we can go and do the business.
No
and
one
we can
thought do is try. Who thought Everton would beat Liverpool?
Exactly.
I thought they were gonna get battered.
Yeah, it's a derby. All stats and history goes out the window for that.
Yeah, but that's a team playing for something, Danny. Mm. Like Tottenham are playing for something. Yep. Forest are playing for something. You know.
The only thing with the Tottenham thing is because they've got us, then they've got Chelsea, then they've got Liverpool before they get to Man City. And there's a very real chance their season is done before they get to City. But I like your optimism. You convinced me. I'm sticking with Sophie. Let's go for it.
Yeah, well, win the fucking... talking about that, this is a Paddy Power advert on Twitter. Download it. It's 1:16, people. Have a right old chuckle at this. We'll be back in 1:16.
It's the most exciting finale to a season for our club since I can remember. It's nail-biting. It's make or break. Yeah, it's stressful, but I'd rather be part of it than not. Do you know what I mean? If you'd have told us at the start of the season that we'd been involved in the title race, I'd have bitten your arm off.
With the greatest respect, what the absolute f*** are you talking about?
Look at the fixtures. We play Liverpool. We play Arsenal and Man City. None of these teams can win the league without beating us. We are literally the kingmakers. The power that Tottenham Hotspur Football Club possesses to shape this season's destiny is incredible. Who said we're not a big club?
Sorry, why have you booked a meeting for this?
I'm ridiculously busy.
28th of April, we could destroy Arsenal's season.
But you won't, will you?
No.
Should we lose to Liverpool? To teach those gooners a lesson? Or maybe we hand City the title by being spanked 4-0 at home? The opportunity is horrendous. What a time to be alive.
Three cup finals. Wouldn't have it any other way.
But that's a three cup finals with no chance of a trophy at the end of it, though.
Well, that's Spurs in a nutshell, to be fair. Oh, Burnley at home on the 11th. Could win that. Or draw. Draw's good.
Paddy Power.
That's so good.
Done it again.
Bravo. Oh my God, their marketing team is so brilliant. I love that.
When they get the Arsenal fans, Spurs fans, when they, those people, are that, is he a Spurs fan doing that? They wouldn't.
Oh, that's
that.
A good question.
You couldn't be a Spurs fan and do that, no matter how much they pay you. But that is, I said, that sums it up though. Spurs are the kingmakers.
I love it. Three cup finals, wouldn't have it any other way.
have you got to go, Sov? Because it's almost 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I've got 5 or 10 more minutes.
Oh, that's good.
I put my call off. Yeah.
Ah, lovely. Right. Sticking with you, Soph, where are we up to now? Next summer is going to be huge with the transfer window. I know I'm looking a bit ahead. We've only got 4 games left of the season. Arteta's tactics have outgrown many players like Zinchenko, Nelson, Smith Rowe, Ramsdale, plus players like Cedric and Elneny are leaving. Can you see the Kroenkes giving him another 200 million to keep building this project? Because those players, like I said, Zinny, Nelson, ESR, Rami, they've got no future at the club, have they? And knowing Arsenal, we're not going to get big money for any of them, because I think, like, someone's asked a question. I've got it saved here, so incorporate this question into it. Where is it? Here we go, from Phil Macca. With so many aspects of our club supremely improved, why are we still so bad at selling? And we've got a lot of players to get rid of in the summer, haven't we, that are worth money?
I think we've got players, though, with market value now. You know, when you're playing for a broken team and players are performing the way they are, you know, it's window shopping. It's not actually shopping. And we also had to get rid of some really bad contracts. And we're going to have to sell players to be compliant financially as well. I can see the Kroenkes investing 100%. But they will want to recoup some of those losses in this transfer window. Look, you've got Ramsdale, who I think is a minimum 40 million player. You've got Eddie Nketiah. And also, some of these players' wages are kind of crazy too. And I know bigger players coming in will change that. But it's funny you mentioned, like, we've outgrown Zinchenko. This is what's going to happen, right? We're going to lose players that we like. And I think Zinchenko's become a bit of a scapegoat, and I don't like that. He came into the club at a time where he gave us a lift and he was part of that culture shift, and I think he was magnificent. Tierney, the same thing. I loved Tierney. He came in at a time and he was one of the players that made us fall in love with our club again, wanted to get, you know, kids wanted his name on the back of their shirts. But the value of Tierney, not great because he's injury prone. But don't tell me that Zinchenko, there's not a team out there that would pay good money for Zinchenko, good money for Ramsdale, good money for Eddie Nketiah, Reece Nelson. Forget the Cedrics and the Elnenys and the Marquinhoses of the world. But we have some players. Thomas Partey, if he does want to go to Saudi Arabia, there's money to be made in this window. So I can definitely see us reinvesting the money we recoup and maybe the Kroenkes digging into their pockets if that financial strategy and we're in compliance allows us to. But as we go and as we build and as we get better, not just this season, next season, we might start losing players we like, especially if we don't win trophies. I think that's the thing that we need to be careful of too. But I can see us having a fire sale this summer, but one that yields rewards financially.
Yeah, that's a good point. Cole, Sophie added a couple of players there to the list that I forgot. Big thing at the moment is clubs having to sell their homegrown players because they need to make money. Now, we've got Nelson, ESR. Like Sophie said, we've got Nketiah. And I think there might be one or two others that like there's maybe Patino might be another one that might want to go because I don't think he wants a third season out on loan. Plus, you're going to get the money from Zinchenko and Tierney that I forgot. And Ramsdale has the ability to be the England number one for many years coming, but he's got no future at the club, and that makes me very sad. Can you see as the problem is, Carl, as we all know, if you want to buy something, you're in a hurry to go and buy this thing. And if you've got to sell something to go and buy that thing, you're worried that thing might go. You're not going to wait to the last minute like Forest do to get a maximum amount of money for your player, which is why they've got the FFP problem and the points deduction. So you're going to go, I've got this player worth 40 million. This player here is 80 million and I need another 30 to get him. Are we going to see players going for less than they're worth because we're in a hurry to get rid of them, and that because that can cause problems financially for us, couldn't it? Because every pound counts with FFP at the moment, with them being so strict about it.
No, we're not going to get the value of our players because we're bad at selling. We are not good at selling players, apart from
Willock
and Martinez. Martinez at the time, I mean, he was on the up. So apart from Willock, Martinez and Iwobi, who have we sold? Like, that's been absolutely brilliant. No one. Like, we don't get market value for our players. And, you know, you think if you want to sell a player, let's just take Emile Smith Rowe. He hasn't got a future at the club. So you put Emile Smith Rowe, When he's at his height, he was probably worth, you know, maybe 30 million. No one's going to pay 30 million for Emile Smith Rowe now because he doesn't play games. So when you go to Arsenal and you say, okay, I'm going to offer you 15 for him, and they say, no, he's worth this much. And they say, well, no, he's not because you don't play him. So if you don't value him as a player, why are we going to pay top dollar for him? I mean, like Sophie said, Ramsdale is probably worth about 40 million. Unfortunately, no one's going to pay 40 million for Ramsdale because they're going to look at Arsenal and say, well, we know you want to get rid of him because you're not playing him. We know he's not happy because we know he wants to leave. We're not going to pay 40 million for him. We're going to test the waters. We're going to, you know, maybe offer 25, maybe 30. And it's not within Arsenal's interest to keep him. They want to get rid of him. So, and he's going to obviously go to knock on Eddie's door and Arteta's door and say, well, X club have bidded for me and you rejected a bid. You don't want me here. You don't want to keep me here. So why are you keeping me here? And they're going to say, well, we want to get market value for you. They're not going to keep an unhappy player. They're just not going to do it because it's going to upset the dressing room. So this is why sometimes when you air your dirty laundry out, it's not really good. And the likes of ESR, when everyone can see that he's not wanted at the club, the likes of Ramsdale, when everyone can see, I think Nelson will probably get kept. Those sort of players, unfortunately, whereas they may be worth top dollar, no one's going to pay top dollar for them because they know that Arsenal need to sell. Arsenal are not very good at selling, and they know that Arsenal don't want these players. So I just don't know. Unfortunately, I just can't see. And also with FFP, you know, every club's watching their belt. Who's going to pay £40 million for a goalkeeper at this precise moment? Maybe Chelsea, because you think of all the clubs that have got that sort of money. Newcastle probably not, because they've got two good goalkeepers. He's not going to go United. He's not going to go Liverpool. He might go Chelsea. He's not going to go Spurs. There's no one else in the Premier League that can afford that sort of money. Emile Smith Rowe, maybe, if let's say you get maybe 25 to 30.
Might want Smith Rowe.
Okay, 25 to 30. Let's say maybe if they get into the Champions League, then, you know, Villa may be looking in a different sort of market. But if they don't get Champions League, who's going to go and get Emile Smith Rowe? Who can
25 million for someone who came out of Haaland is good business. That is great business. The same with Reece Nelson. Like if he fetches 15, and also they're English players. The market is more valuable when you sell an English asset. And I think it's going to be a little bit. I think it's going to be a little bit different this season because maybe there's they're bargaining chips too. Sell to a team where maybe we want a player that from that opposing team. You just have to be smarter about it. And I think we've learned a lot of lessons. I want to kind of be open minded about maybe giving them a little bit more credit because the assets are superior this season. Someone was saying to me, Eddie Nketiah is clueless. Eddie Nketiah scored Premier League goals. You know, Leicester, Jamie Vardy's aging. Leicester City, I could see Leicester City coming in and wanting a Reece Nelson or an Eddie. I could see whoever comes up, Leeds United. I can see them going for players like that. And they'll spend money. They'll have some money coming up into the Premier League to spend. And Eddie, again, Haalander. If you get 20 million, 15 million for him, that's good business.
I think the problem is that when we sell these players, we need to replace them. And it's a case of who we're replacing them with and how much are we going to need to spend to replace them. Now, I'm not saying keep players for sentiment, but if you sell Eddie Nketiah, who are you going to replace him with? Who comes in and does the job that Eddie Nketiah does?
Will Wanneri get promoted, Carl, next season? Who's coming up? You know, who's the next? I'm not saying who's the next Saka, but someone will emerge from that under 21 team. Maybe a couple players. I'm not saying they'll be world beaters, but I don't think it's as. We found like Martinelli cost X amount. You got to be smart, right? I think we just need to be smarter with how we buy. We're not going to be spending 100 million like we did on Declan Rice. It's just not going to happen.
Oh, no, we're not going to spend that sort of money this season. No way.
How about you, Rich? Have you got any thoughts on it?
I'm kind of in between both of them, to be honest with you. I think we have been notoriously bad at selling because our assets have not been good and we've been so poor for so long. I think there is talent in our squad that ordinarily I think that you would be able to sell. I think the pressures of FFP, I mean, you look at the fact that January window, how low key that was, I think is a kind of clue or kind of indicator of that. I don't think it's going to be as much money banding about as possible. I think also the fact that, again, we have been notoriously bad at selling, and not only just bad at selling, but ripping up contracts and kind of, you know, if players and agents don't get what they want, we'll just stay and then you'll have to pay us off. And we, unfortunately, we've had to do that too many times, which is, I think, is kind of set a bad precedent. I think, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's essentially what happened. That was what happened with Pepe, you know, and that's why, you know, Cedric didn't get sold, I think, for that very similar reason. Like I say, he was, well, why should I go? I've still got this contract. Either pay me or I'll stay to the end of my contract where I can get, you know, go on a free or get remunerated how I want to be. But I think there is sales in that thing. I don't think it's going to be one massive sale, for instance, or, you know, anything big. I can't see anything over 25 to 30 million, really. But, you know, if we've got the loads of little incremental ones, like you said, like ESR's, much as it would pain me to lose him, like, he was one of those guys where he came in at Boxing Day and he made you fall back in love with the club. He forged that, helped forge that connection between the fans and the team. But he's not playing. Arteta doesn't seem to trust him. You know, you might as well cash in on him. And if he's, like I say, he's an academy product, then you've, again, it's almost what they call pure profit. It's like what Man City did with Cole Palmer and what Chelsea are looking to do with, I would imagine, with Conor Gallagher as well.
Rich, before you carry on, Soap's got to go. Mm-hmm. People,
okay. Sorry,
Sophie. Hybrid Squad. There's the link in YouTube. Go and subscribe. You won't be disappointed. Have you got anything wonderful to tantalise the viewers with coming up soon, Soph?
We'll be back for Monday Madness. And we just did a couple of great shows. Payback for Jason Cundy for being awful to Arsenal over the years. That was nice. Go check it out. You'll enjoy the introduction, kids.
I'm surprised he turned up.
He turned up the next day. I mean, he was wearing his Chelsea shirt, but it was glorious.
Yeah.
and did a show yesterday with Lee Judges, Harry Simeu, and Tom Canton that you'll really enjoy. And I know even though it was last Monday, Henry Winter was on. And I'd love for people to listen to what he had to say about Mikel Arteta and where we're going as a club. I think people will really enjoy that. So
I haven't listened to that one yet. Have you snapped him up now that he's on a free?
Yeah, I've got him in the. He's mine for next season. He'll come on whenever. So it's lovely to have Henry be a supporter of the channel. It's wonderful.
He is a lovely bloke. He also did one with FK, ex of this parish, who was also his usual chocolate voiced special self. That was lovely.
Yeah, slowly becoming one of the top three velvet voices of Arsenal podcasting. And he was on the show with Henry, actually, which was lovely too. And we had ex-Luton Town manager Paul Buckle on as well. So some good content the last three or four shows. Go check it out. And sorting out Monday's show, another great guest coming up. So, and thank you. The chat's been wonderful. Everyone's been very kind. And Richard and Carl, very nice to chat with you guys too. Some great perspectives. It's just lovely being in the company of sensible Arsenal fans.
And it is getting more and more often now, isn't it? It's strange. Yes, it is.
And well, of course to you, Danny. Always grateful for you. Made my debut on this channel, for those that don't know, and always grateful to... they call Arseblog the Podfather, but really you are.
I'm the pod mother. He started and I followed. Yeah,
exactly.
I do the washing up and the cooking. He just sits there and takes all the glory.
Love it. Love you guys.
Avon
take care.
Says here, much love to Sir Kev as well.
Yes. Keep sending your love to Super Kev. He's watching all the shows and it's keeping him good company while he recovers. So, take care, everyone. And as Super Kev will say, don't forget to tell your loved ones you love them. It's very important.
All right, cheers, Soph. We'll speak
to
you later.
Bye. Take care. Bye, guys. Bye. Lots of love.
Rich, you were saying that Man City having to sell the likes of that player they sold to Chelsea to balance the books.
Essentially, I don't think there's going to be massive amounts. I was kind of in between the two of them. I don't think there's going to be massive amount of sales, but I think it's going to be lots of like incremental sales and getting wages off the books and like I say, I think I can see Nelson going, I can see ESR going, which will help with the I don't know if they're not going to change it straight away, but with the FFP and stuff like that, because they're academy products and stuff like that. So it's I'm tired, I'm just in a pessimistic mood, but I can't see us making big sales and recouping lots and lots of money. I don't think there's a market for it at the minute. With everyone scared of FFP, and I don't think we've got the pedigree of making big sales. Like I said, you think that list that Carl brought up. Like I said, the list, the Ox, Iwobi, Willock. Apart from that, there's not massive amounts of there where we've recouped lots of money, so there's no precedent for that.
Yeah. Carl, have we seen enough of Partey, these cameo appearances, to think there was any likelihood he could stay next season? Because when he's fit and when he's having a good day, he is unstoppable. And we saw even a not match fit Partey was banging the ball all over the place, wasn't tracking back as much as he could do, wasn't getting involved as much. But when he gets the ball, it's almost like it's a missile, isn't it? The way he delivers those balls.
Someone very wise once said to me, don't make long-term plans on short-term emotions. Just because he's come in and he's played one game against Chelsea, who are a very shit side, and he's looked good, and against Wolves, who are not a very good side, don't start lauding him now, because I think Arsenal fans have too much sentiment in them. And Danny, you and I, and in our group, we've spoken about Partey at length for many various reasons. And I don't think he should be in the squad. I don't think, you know, if we're going to be a serious team, we need to look past him. We can't just hold people there. He can't stay fit. He cannot stay fit at all. And he comes in, he plays well, and then he'll have a thigh injury that will keep him out for how many odd games. I think it was Femi who brought up something that he's actually missed more games than he's played in his Arsenal career. And I think that was a stat and a half. And, you know, I really don't want to start, keep him, you know, sell him to whoever, to a Saudi club, to a whatever club. And I think if we get anything over 15 million for him, then I think we've done well. If he's what, 30, 31, I believe. 30, 31, something along them lines. So
I did have to pay up with all the players. Let's change not, every year, it's hard to keep track of.
Yeah, let's not keep him just because he's come in and played a game.
31 in June.
There you go. So 31 next season. So let's not keep him just because he's played a few good games against some poor sides. You know, he needs consistency. If he plays every single game from now to the end of this season and he stays fit and he plays 90 minutes, then, you know, maybe you can reconsider. But at the moment, right now, if someone came in for anything over 15 million, I'm selling him because I don't want to keep him just because he's played a few games against some poor teams. Now, that's not to say that he's not good, because he was good. He was very, very good when he came in against Wolves. He kind of changed the game, didn't he? And very good when he played against Chelsea. But no, I don't want to keep him. And I'm sure there are better players out in Europe that could do the job that he does. So I think maybe he needs to go. But the problem is, and I'll ask Rich's question as well, if Jorginho, who's in his last year of his contract, I believe, either this year is his last year or the year after, can we really afford to get rid of Jorginho and Partey in the same season? Because that would be a massive, massive hole that we need to fill.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's too, it's too much experience. It's too much quality to leave, because I think the Egyptian Perlo's going as well, is it not? So I mean, he's just a body as well that can to put in that thing. It's too much of an overhaul in that midfield for, and especially because what we got Havertz for, he kind of has moved on and become something else. So that kind of left eight position is what we need to supplement, rather than kind of lose thing. I it's hard with Partey, because I genuinely think he's one of the best midfielders I've seen in a long, long time. We are so much better when he's in the side and he's fit. He raises our level so high. He is a phenomenal football player. The composure he has on the ball, the trust and that he has with his own abilities, the ability to draw players onto things, you know, his passing ability, even like little subtle little things in between the lines where he draws people on, are just phenomenal. And I thought he was absolutely sensational against Chelsea. Although, you know, Chelsea are lauded as being crap. That's a World Cup winner in midfield, and 100 million Caicedo, who we were in that midfield, along with Conor Gallagher. That, you know, that wasn't a dog shit thing, and you could see his qualities. But I agree with Carl in the sense of, we can't be emotionally attached to it, because he can't give you games, and he's missing for far too long, and we're missing far too often. And I think it's, maybe over 15, I might have to agree with Carl, maybe over 15, we might have to look and at least keep one of, you know, if we're keeping Jorginho, which it sounds like it is, I would say anything under 15, I actually think I would keep him just because it doesn't seem worth that loss of that amount of money, considering what we need to spend to replace him. Because I think someone of his quality, you're talking big, 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 big bucks.
Problem is, isn't this part of his last season as well of his contract? Next season is his last season, I should say. Sorry, my bad. Mm. So if you're not going to renew, would you not just try and recoup anything you can for him? I agree. Like, I think Jorginho, I would, if you're going to sell, if Jorginho's going to walk away for free, you might as well keep him for one last season, because for what we paid for him and what he can deliver, I'd probably just keep him. And right, I think, would we pay like 12 million for him or something like that? Like, in football terms, that's nothing. So you probably just eat that and just not worry about Partey. I think if we could recoup any amount of money for him, I think it's likely that we will, just because of his fitness factor. He can't stay fit. So why are we keeping him for one more season? If you know that you're not going to renew him, you might just get rid of him now, personally. Because the amount of games that he's missed, we just can't. I think we can afford to keep him. And if there's another player out there that can do the job that Partey doesn't, I'm sure there is, you know, Mikel and Edu's and the scouts, I'm surely they're, you know, looking at a player in each position to say, oh, if this player goes, then we can replace him with that person and so on and so on. But yeah, I'd keep Jorginho, just eat the free. Like, if he's going to walk away for the free, just don't worry about that. But Partey, like you said, like we both alluded to, I think anything over 15, sell him, just go, because we need to try and recoup back some money to put towards his replacement.
I think the other thing is he's on, I would imagine his wages, he's on pretty big wages as well, I think would be another incentive, I guess. But I again, you always have that little nagging thing to doubt in your mind, because like I say, when he's fit and he's playing, he is sensational. I'd love to meet, like, for us to sign another player who can do what he can do, because say I think he's one of the best in the world at that position.
I agree, when he's fit, but how often is he fit? And that unfortunately is the problem, because he's not as fit as he should. Like we said, how do you sign for a club and you've been there 5 years, and you're not fit more than you are fit? And I think that is a huge problem. And there's no doubt that Arteta and the rest of the coaching staff and the management are looking at that thinking, you know, we paid X amount for this guy and we haven't managed to kind of got our money's worth for him. Because if he came in and he was fit and, you know, he could do what he does, now you'd think to yourself, oh my God, like, that midfield that we played against Chelsea was the first time those three played together this, or started the game this season. That's horrendous. That is absolutely horrendous to think that. And, you know, the fact that we're in April and, well, call it May, and that's the first time they started together. You know, that should have been our starting midfield from the beginning of the season. That, if we had that midfield, and don't get it wrong, the people have come in, Jorginho's come in, he's done absolutely brilliantly. Like, when Havertz has played there, you know, you're kind of hoping that he does better. But, you know, these players have come in and done the job. But that midfield of Partey, Odegaard and Rice, that starting three midfield, it is just an absolutely world-class midfield. And if they had played or been fit enough to start all together, or Partey had been fit to start and played some games, who knows where we would have been. And I know it's all ifs, buts and maybes, but for me, that is an absolutely world-class midfield. But Danny, if you like, gun to your head right now, and whoever, ex-club, come in and said, here's 15 million for Partey, would you take that?
Yeah, I would. But I just looked, he's missed about 55 Premier League games in 3.5 seasons. And we only play 38 a season. But I would think it's going to be more of a mutual agreement to cancel the contract, because he's not fit enough for the rigours of Premier League football. It's a lot different strolling around in La Liga, where you get 3 or 4 tough games a season, but whereas over here, you're expected to put it on every single game twice a week.
But now we've got Declan Rice. I would imagine that the need to play him and play every minute and play every game would lessen. I think, like, was it 55 games you said he's missed, Danny? And I would imagine that the bulk of that has been this season.
Yeah.
The other times in other seasons where he, I don't think he's actually missed that many games in other seasons. It's just that he missed the key. It was always the key games right towards the end of the season and that running that I think that he was called. So, I mean, if you're going to lose him for a free or cancel his contract, like he's not going to sign and you're just, no one's going to buy him, you might as well just play him then because he's that bloody good.
True. Right. 1 hour 20. Let's do a few questions, shall we? First one in was right at the beginning of the show from Jimmy H. Give this one to you, Carl. If we don't win the league in the next 2 seasons, is it time for Arteta to move on as he will be close to £1 billion spent on the team? Or what point do we move on to another manager? I think he's on 600 million at the moment. So if you average last season, it's 200 million. 200 for the next 2 seasons makes it £1 billion.
I think he needs to win another trophy. I'll be really honest with you. Because like we alluded to earlier, like when Sophie was here, are we just going to plateau and just be second, third? Because the thing is, other teams are going to get better. Like, as much as I hate to say this, Man United might get their shit together and start challenging. Spurs will always be Spurs and I'm not worried about them. Liverpool may get their shit together. Chelsea are just one manager away for them being very good. Because they've got the players. The players are there. And they just haven't got the manager around them to make these players good. And if they manage to find a certain manager to make them good, Chelsea will be very good. They 100% will be. So, you know, at the moment, while this kind of reminds me of the 2016 season, you know, when every single team in the world was shit and Leicester from nowhere. By the way, congratulations to Leicester because they just got promoted back to the Premier League this evening. So, but it reminds me of that season where everyone was shit and Leicester out of nowhere came and won the league. And that was just like a key moment where, you know, we could have won the league at that time, but Leicester just done it. And I think at the moment, you've got, apart from Man City, every team is not going to be good. I think next season, I think Liverpool are going to take a little nosedive. Spurs are always going to be Spurs. I think Man United, they will get their shit together, unfortunately. And if Chelsea do sack Poch, depending on who they bring in, they're obviously going to spend another £400 million and then sell their hotel to one of their friends and then buy it back for a penny, as they do, you know, just a way to get around FFP. So, you know, these teams are going to get better. We just need to make sure that we're doing our job. And keep playing, but I think he definitely needs to win a trophy very, very soon, or it comes to a point where our Arsenal going to be like back in the day, just happy qualifying for the Champions League, just happy being second. He needs to find a way to beat Pep, or whenever Pep leaves, or these 115 charges come into fruition. I don't know whatever happens with that, but yeah, I don't want Arteta to go. I really don't. I think the next 2 seasons will make or break him.
Have you got anything on that, Rich? Bearing in mind, you two are the ones I've got to go because it's got time soon.
No, I think I kind of agree with Carl. I'm a little bit more along the lines of as long as we're improving and as long as we're getting better, eventually we will get trophies kind of thing. So as long as we don't, you know, take a nosedive and stuff like that, as long as we're competing, you know, competing for the trophies. I don't mean in the sense of like the old Wenger fourth is a trophy and we're just sneaking into what's called. I'm talking about being, you know, similar to what we are this season in the sense of, you know, in the last, you know, with the last, you know, 4 or 5 games of the season and we're in with a brilliant, brilliant chance of winning the league. That's, you know, that's what I want. You know, no team has a divine right to win trophies and stuff like that, not unless you do, you know, breach 115 times. You know, no team has a divine right to do that sort of thing. So as long as we're improving, and one of those improvements, doing better in the cups, doing better in the League Cup, doing better in the FA Cup, because I mean, mate, I'd love to win another FA Cup and extend our record run.
That would be nice. He's but I think once he gets the squad and the backups that he wants, because we all know he doesn't trust his subs, then maybe we'll be pushing for more silverware on those other two fronts. Phil Macker asks, Carl, does anyone believe City will receive a punishment that sees them relegated? Can you answer that in one word or two words?
They won't.
No, fuck no. Which?
Won't happen.
No. Not at all.
Okay. He's followed that up with another question. What has been Arteta's best achievement, Carl?
Getting the squad to where it is. I think rooting out all the Bundesliga bastards, getting the squad to where it is, you know, at the moment that we know of, they're harmonious, they're playing for each other. So I think there's a feel good factor around Arsenal. And if you had said this in 2020, you would have thought I was smoking something. But, you know, where we are right now, we're second in the league and we're fighting for the title, and no one in the month of Sundays would have said in 2020 that we would have been where we are now.
Rich, any thoughts? I'll press the wrong
button. My one would be like the connection that he's fostered, that him and the club have fostered between the team and the fans again, you know, after all the toxicity and stuff like that, he's made, and the team have made the Emirates a fun place to go again. And yeah, that I would say that building that connection between between the first team and the fans.
Formerly known as a footsie, just tell Liverpool fans they've won the Premier League title as many times as Leicester and Blackburn. True. You can't argue with that. Right, so that's that. Go on. My personal favourite for Mikel is playing the beautiful game again, because he did it last season and we're doing a different version this season, and it is wonderful to see. Final question from formerly Noser, Carl. Starting lineup for the Derby game on Sunday. Would you just stick with the starting lineup we had for the last game?
Yeah, it's the same against Chelsea. Like, exactly the same.
Yeah.
Maybe swap Trossard for Martinelli. I think he needs a little bit of run out, because Martinelli's not been the best. But if you can have someone like Martinelli, he's just going to keep running and push them back, then that's good. But, you know, you have to look at the counter-attack, because Spurs are going to play a high line and they are going to create chances. And if you are going to play Martinelli, you have to tell him that he has to run back no matter what. So, yeah. I am hopeful that we're going to beat them. We have to beat Spurs, right? We have to. Surely, like, I mean, fuck Spurs, firstly and foremost. Like, fuck them. And we have to kind of go. I mean, we haven't spoken much about them because I know it's a preview, a review podcast, but we have to go and beat them, right? And if we do, like, Rich, if we beat Spurs, do you think that would give us the impetus to go on and actually win this league? Because we can't control what other people do. I'm not interested in Man City. I'm genuinely not interested in them, because we can't control what they do. But if we go on and we beat Spurs, that would give us the biggest ego boost ever, to think that we can
almost go, a trophy.
Yeah, don't mind that one. But we can go anywhere and play these and beat the teams. I mean, yeah, we slipped up sometimes, but we go and beat Spurs. And I think our next hardest game is a Man United away. If we can beat Spurs, and surely you look at that and think to yourself, this is our, like, not that we've got this in the bag, but, you know, this puts pressure on Man City to think, oh shit, they're actually not giving up. Like, they're not just laying down. They actually keep coming for this. So do you think that is going to be good for us if we beat them? I mean, obviously it will be, but...
It's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be a dent in them to not get in the Champions League and make them miserable and beat them in their new toilet, in their toilet bowl. And it will, regardless of if we're seventh in the league or eighth in the league or first, mate, we want to beat them. We want to make them suffer. We want to make sure that, you know, we win the derby. I think, as you said, Carl, it doesn't look like Man City are going to drop points, and I don't think they will. But as we said earlier, who thought that Liverpool were going to get beaten by Everton? So yeah, we have to make sure that we win and we do our job and we go out there and we put a marker down and make them have to win all their games. We can't afford any slip-ups. And, you know, it's going to be tough in the sense that it's going to be a real tough game. You know, like, you know, we've played four games and they've had like 19 days to do nothing but focus on this game. This is their cup final. Like I said, if they lose this, they're going to be giving up way too much space and points to Aston Villa. So this game is going to be, it is going to be, as much as it pains me to say, it's going to be a tough old game. Just because, like I said, so much is at stake. You know, they're going to absolutely want to stop us winning the league. And they want to be the ones that say, we stopped you from winning, we ruined your season. You know, like I said, they've had, you know, 2.5 weeks or where it was, just focused on this game, getting their players back ready who they needed to get back ready, doing the analysis on our four games that we played in that time. But I think if we do what we can, if we play how we can play, we'll be able to beat them, and then we throw down that gauntlet to Man City. We've won our games. We've got our points on the board. Let's see what you do with your game in hand. And maybe you never know, that pressure might get to them. They might get tired legs. You know, you got Forrest, you know, fighting for their very lives and pissed off because of all the ills and wrongs that have gone at them. Maybe they get, you know, a long old journey down to Craven Cottage down from Manchester. They get a bit leggy and a bit tired and they get caught unawares. We have to do our jobs. We have to put our performance in and we have to make sure that we get every single point that we can.
Oh, yeah, agreed. I definitely agreed.
Final question, Carl, from Formerly Noser. What do you think of Tottenham?
Feces.
Oh, Rich, what do you think of feces?
Tottenham.
What do you think to the new Pepsi cans? Aren't they a delight? They've even updated.
Oh, they're very nice. Yeah, hey, that's what I got.
Ah, lovely.
Snap.
I've got about 80 cans of that in the kitchen. Yumly, yum, yum, yum. Archangel, we are battle hardened. They won't be match fit. Yep, having that 2.5 weeks off, that's a good point. What else have we got on there? Avon says, it didn't smell of, oh, I haven't telling Nick. Avon says, the great news is Tottenham haven't been able to defend a corner all season long. What a great way to end the show. Right, people. Canterbury Gooner, we have only won there once in the last, so don't bring us down. Good God, sir. How dare you? Oh, I've got a Pepsi burp coming. Jesus, nothing I could do about that. Like pooping your pants. Right. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching. If you are new, give it a thumbs up, subscribe, all that other bullshit that makes absolutely no difference. Thank you to Rich. Lovely to have you back and smiling.
Cheers
for
having me, mate.
Jolly good. Lovely to have you back as well, Carl. We have missed the pair review and your logical points of view rather than having, I don't know, the rest of them are. But I haven't done anything in fucking ages, have we? So I can't compare you to anyone other than myself, and I've been decidedly poor. So cheers, Carl.
Danny, I shall be back more often, hopefully now. So yes, no worries.
Good, good. Finally, thank you very much to Sophie for joining us from the Highbury squad. You all know who she is and you all know her podcast. So thank you to her. Best wishes to Mr. Kevin Campbell, Arsenal player and one of the men who made Arsenal great again and doesn't get enough credit for what he did with Paul Merson and Ian Wright and David Hillier and Ian Selly and Martin Keown and Winterburn and Dixon and Kevin Richardson. Another one, Brian Marwood, all these players. It wasn't just all about one player, much like this podcast. It's a family. Ah, oh, bless. Right. I'm going to end the show and I'm actually going to end it with a proper outro. And because you lot have been so good, I'm going to end it with the Anfield 89. Get us a little bit riled up for the game at the weekend. And remember, fuck Spurs. Fuck them right in the face. Goodbye.
Out it goes to Lee Dixon. Long ball from Lee Dixon. Smith will hold it up. Plays it square to Thomas. And Thomas has got inside Nicol. And Thomas is there. And Thomas has scored for Arsenal. In injury time, Michael Thomas has scored for Arsenal. A ball played through the gap. Thomas was there. He held off two challenges. Kept his head. By my watch, we are a minute and a half into injury time. And Michael Thomas may have won the championship.